If you've missed a show, the full audio library is at RadioMD.com. And now back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
And this is Dr. Mike, and you're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on RadioMD.com. You can always communicate with us at 877-711-5211, 877-711-5211, or email at udocs@gmail.com. The topic today is an interesting one because it's not as common a disease as we usually talk about, but it is a model, or maybe a model, of what we call neurodegenerative diseases, diseases that affect the nervous system that seem to be progressive and that we don't seem to have made much progress with over time. So MS used to be one of those. And clearly Alzheimer's disease and many forms of dementia now are. But this one, ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, affects people in the younger periods of life, much like MS does, but doesn't seem to have had much progress with it. On the line with me today are Piera Passanelli, who's an associate professor of neuroscience and co-director of the Weinberg Unit for ALS Research at Thomas Jefferson University, and scientific director of the Robert Packard Center for ALS Research at Johns Hopkins University. Hard to get better credentials than that. And Michael Jablonski is the lead author, also of the Weinberg Center at Thomas Jefferson University, and of the lead author of the recent study that showed there may be a different mechanism. So, Michael, let me start with you if I can, and Pierre, feel free to jump in at any time. Tell us a little bit about the background of ALS, how many people it affects, how it works, why is it so progressive, and why have we had such a tough time trying to make any progress?
Sure. So, you know, ALS, is obviously, as you mentioned, is a neurodegenerative disease, primarily affecting motor neurons. So, you know, these motor neurons are degenerating and dying in the central nervous system, and that's causing basically the impact of the disease.
So because the motor neurons are the neurons which innervate the muscles and control the movements, as a result of degeneration of these motor neurons, what the patients lose their ability progressively to walk, to talk, to write, to basically do any of the movements that we do regularly, and eventually they die by respiratory failure 3 to 5 years from diagnosis.
The question is, why do the motor neurons die? And has there been any progress since even Lou Gehrig developed this at preventing those motor neurons from dying or stabilizing the disease or at least getting it to the point where it doesn't progress further?
The research on ALS has obviously been happening for quite some time with the development of different preclinical models, animal models, and the like. But really, there has not been any significant progress into the reason that these motor neurons are dying. The reason is unknown at this point.
And so what has been the approach at the Weinberg Center to try and change this? In other words, is this a model, or can this be a model of other neurodegenerative diseases, or is this something so different that it is really unique to itself? Pierre, why don't you take that?
Yeah, so this is a very interesting question. So the mouse model that we used in the study that we are talking about today is really a unique mouse model of ALS, which recapitulates one specific familial form of ALS caused by mutation in a gene which is called superoxide dismutase, which accounts for 20 to 30% of familial ALS cases, meaning 2% to 3% of all ALS. It is a robust model, and it is the model that we had to recapitulate ALS since 1994 when this model was made. And it is a robust because it, when I say it is a robust model, it's because it really recapitulates at the molecular level, at the pathological level, and at the clinical level, to the extent possible, obviously, because we are talking about mice, the human disease. This is specific for ALS. It is not a model on or any other neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's, as you mentioned earlier, or Huntington's disease or Parkinson's disease. But so this is really specific for ALS. Having said that, because even though these neurodegenerative diseases all affect a specific neuronal population, ALS, as we were saying earlier, affect primarily motor neurons, there are many similarities in these diseases at the molecular level. So while this particular model that we studied in the Weinberg unit is an ALS model, I think that the lessons that we can learn in terms of how the neurodegenerative process occurs can also be applied to some of other models or some other diseases. Because
so
even
Michael,
though, again,
we're talking
they are unique,
to you. I'm sorry. So, Michael, we're talking to you because there's this recent important study that you are the lead author of that talks about a very different mechanism of ALS or of neurodegenerative diseases than we've thought of before. Tell us a little bit about that and why this is such a breakthrough.
Sure. So the idea of this study is really, you know, rethinking the typical model of treating ALS. So rather than targeting these pathways, which we don't fully understand, the idea behind this study was to look at really a different class of transporters. They're called drug efflux transporters that are highly expressed at the blood-brain barrier. And what we found prior to this paper was that in the ALS disease, both in the mouse and in the humans, there's a change in these drug efflux transporters. So they increase in expression there, and their function increases as well. And the whole purpose of these transporters is really to pump out any potential toxins, limit the bioavailability, thereby, of the potential drugs used to treat ALS. So with this change during the course of the disease, the increase in these transporters, the bioavailability of any drug used to treat ALS may be decreased as well throughout disease, and leading to decreased efficacy in the end.
Now, let me go, and so this is an unusual thing. So what you're finding is that something that cells normally have to pump out a toxin, toxic metals, is now being used to pump out what you hope would be a very useful drug. So
right.
Is there a way of still having getting rid of the toxic metals, but having something that blocks or that changes the drug so it isn't pumped out?
Right. So there would definitely be a balance there. And because these transporters are pumping out so many of these foreign substances, these drugs are also considered foreign substances. And while it's good to have some expression of these transporters, an overwhelming amount can limit the bioavailability into the central nervous system of those ALS-treating agents or the drugs that are really foreign to the cell but would perhaps be beneficial.
Piera, we'll come back and we'll start right there. We've been talking with people from the Weinberg Center at Thomas Jefferson University about ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, and this breakthrough paper that talked about the mechanisms. We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual radio show on Radio MD, and talk about why this is important to you, even if you don't have anything like Lou Gehrig's disease. We'll be right back.
Don't miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're talking, we're talking, with two real experts on about Lou Gehrig disease. They're from the Weinberg Center from Thomas Jefferson University. Mike Jablonski is the lead author of a paper that has a real breakthrough in it, and co-author and with him from the Weinberg Center is Piera Passanelli. She's also director, in addition to co-director of the Weinberg Unit for ALS Research at Thomas Jefferson University, and co-director of the graduate program in neuroscience there, is also scientific director of the Robert Packard Center for ALS Research at Johns Hopkins. So she commutes back and forth, I suppose, be from Philadelphia to Baltimore, not a long commute on the train. But tell me, when we were starting, Piera, we were ending the last segment, you were talking about why this has relevance, why this new mechanism, which is found to transport the drug or to increase transport of the drug out of the neurons it's supposed to help, just like it transports heavy metals out or toxins out, why this is important for other diseases as well, or other neurodegenerative diseases.
Yes, so because this is a mechanism that is not specific for ALS, and in fact, it is a mechanism that has been very widely studied in other diseases. Cancer is, I think, the lead example. Leukemia, some forms of epilepsy, for instance, which there is a subset of epilepsy patients who do not respond to drug, and it turns out that they not respond to drugs because they have, again, like we found in ALS, an increase in function and expression at the level of the blood-brain barrier of these transporters. So this is really something that we in the ALS field learn from other diseases and apply to the ALS field, where this phenomenon was surprisingly underestimated and understudied. So why this is applicable to other diseases? Because, again, so we have in our body this defense mechanism, as Michael was saying earlier. So we have these drug efflux transporters at the level of the blood-brain barrier, which really defends the brain from foreign toxins and metals, as you said. They are, as I say, not so smart, and they are not specific in their recognition of what is beneficial, like a drug, or what is detrimental, like a toxin. And so this is really not universal only to ALS. What I think is important to say is that while this is a phenomenon that is really well characterized and recognized mainly by pharmaceutical companies, that when they want to develop a drug, they have to be able to know whether a drug reaches the target and crosses the blood-brain barrier and does what it is supposed to do. So they know, the pharmaceutical company, and we in study biology and study diseases know that one of the impediment to really reach the target is the pharmaceutical target is these transporters. So normally new drugs that are developed are tested whether they are a substrate of these transporters. Our paper shows that rather than testing them as it has been done so far in normal individual, not disease individual, I think we should test the drugs, our paper shows that we should test the drugs in the context of the disease and during the disease progression. Because Michael found is that, for instance, for the ALS mouse, which is what we have been studied, if we were to deliver drugs before the mice get sick, before disease onset, the drug will go in. And the drug will do what it is supposed to do because these drug efflux transporters didn't kick in yet.
The transporter out, Piera, really doesn't kick into maximum function or even any function
until
the disease is evident.
Until the disease is in full swing, I would say. And so if we were to give a drug like Riluzole, for instance, like we did for ALS, Riluzole is the only FDA-approved drug for ALS. Riluzole is constantly working, is the only drug that works in the patient, but its effect is very marginal. And so if we were to give Riluzole before the mice get sick, what we found is that Riluzole goes in because this transporter didn't start working completely yet and they didn't pump it out.
It's so only let's talk about
progresses.
Let's talk about human disease now. So
right.
in humans, the ALS symptoms usually become pretty severe fairly quickly.
Right.
Will that give us enough time to treat this or to try treatment with this? Will there be enough, in fact, even people with this, with early symptoms, to make this treatment potential? Or do we just learn from this about other ways of blocking the transport out?
So we don't know. But what we know, for instance, again, taking Riluzole as an example, you're absolutely right. ALS progresses very, very rapidly. But what we know with Riluzole is that in the first year of treatment, usually patients get Riluzole the moment they come to the clinic and they receive a definite diagnosis of ALS. So what we know is that Riluzole is highly effective in patients in the first 12 months of treatment, reducing mortality in public studies by about 38%. What we know also is that initial efficacy is reduced dramatically starting from the second year of treatment, from 38 to about 19%. Now, we don't know if this dramatic decrease is due in patients to an increase in function of these efflux transporters, and this is something that we are now studying, but we think that our mouse studies lead towards this idea. So if we were to be able to block these drug efflux transporters from the get-go, from the time the patients receive the first treatment, whether it is Riluzole or something else, in the first year, maybe we will be able to delay this pumping out, which dramatically increases in the second year of treatment.
Excellent. And I want to thank you very much for participating with us. We've been talking to Piera Passanelli and Michael Jablonski about ALS and about this new mechanism, this really breakthrough treatment that they've found from the Weinberg Center at Thomas Jefferson University, and why this is important for other diseases. This is a mechanism that maybe earlier treatment will be able to help reverse. It's just promise, but it is great promise.
Green light. Hey, girl. School zone. I'm getting hungry. Car changing lanes. You want to meet me for pizza? Stop sign. Intersection clear. Yeah, street. Pizza sounds good. Ball in street? Girl in street!
It's hard to concentrate on two things at once, like texting and driving. Stop the text. Stop the wrecks. How will you stop texting and driving? Tell us at stoptextstopwrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
It sounds disgusting, but the average person has 160 varieties, 100 trillion bacteria in their GI tract. Some bacteria are beneficial, many are not. Undesirable bacteria can leave you feeling tired and sluggish and bloated. A simple solution, Natron's Healthy Trinity. You've heard of Healthy Trinity. It's the premier probiotic that's been helping millions of people with digestive problems for over 20 years. This powerful probiotic can help optimize digestion, promote healthy immune, colon, and liver function. And with a healthy digestive system, you'll gain focus and energy, and you'll feel so much better. Here's a special offer, 20% off a 3-month supply of Healthy Trinity. This is a limited time offer with a money back guarantee. Get 20% off right now. Call 866-4-NATRON or go to natron.com. Enter promo code RadioMD for the discount. Don't miss a single day without taking your healthy trinity. Natron.com.